is number 11. This is your host, Katarina Rando, and we have a great program lineup for you this month. Our first guest is Angie Hollerich, certified financial planner who's going to help us keep more of what we earn. And our second author expert is Dolores Presley, who is going to help us clean out the closets of our life. Angie Hollerich is a certified financial planner and the author of Grab the Brass Ring of Financial Security, a self-help guide to secure a financial future. She is also a certified educational planner, certified women's business enterprise, and a member of the Association of Financial Counseling and Planning Education. Angie, we're so excited because today you're going to talk to us about the 10 most common money mistakes that women make. What are they and how do we not make them?
Well, the first and foremost money mistake that I found when I would manage clients' portfolios and talk to my clients about finances is that we tend not to want to do things that aren't fun and comfortable and that we don't really know a lot about, so we tend to procrastinate. And I think that is the very first money mistake that I found, that we want to put off tomorrow what we could really do today. And if we have basic fundamentals and understand that if we just get started, because the longer we wait to do a financial plan and understand finances and know the things that we need to do for ourselves financially, the harder it's going to be to play catch up. And I don't know about you, Katarina, but for me, a secure financial retirement is my long-term goal.
And I know for a lot of women, they want to have a secure financial retirement, and they also want to have more financial ease today. How do we balance those, or how do we have both of those happen at the same time?
The reason that we have financial stress is because we don't establish goals and objectives, which is the second most common money mistake that I find that people make. We don't really know what our short, intermediate, and long-term goals are. It's just like any other area of your life. If you're trying to accomplish something, you have to start somewhere. And usually what I try to get people to do is not look in the rearview mirror, because, you know, we all make mistakes. But from today on, establish your short, intermediate, and long-term goals for your money, especially as a business owner, because if you are a sole proprietor and you are your business, your personal financial habits are your business financial habits. So if you do poorly managing your personal finances, you're not going to do any better managing your business finances. What I suggest that business owners do is start today, figure out your short, intermediate, and long-term goals and where it is that you need to be for a secure present, but a secure financial future also.
Now, Angie, does that mean that we need to do a budget? I know a lot of women don't like to
Well, most of us would rather poke ourselves in the eye than do a budget. But a budget is the complete foundation of any start to understanding finances, because especially if you're a business owner, if you don't have a concept of what money is coming into your business and what money is going out, you're never going to find out if there's any discretionary spending for you to put away for yourself. And I'm not just talking about a home in Florida when you retire. I'm talking about a new car, marketing plan for your business, hiring a PR person if you need to. If you don't have any concept of what you're making and what money is going out, you're never going to be able to say, okay, look, I need to take from this part of my budget and put it into this part of my budget because I concentrated on sales last year, but I really need to concentrate on marketing this year. Where's that money going to come from if you have no concept of what money you have to spend for those areas? So I think that's very important for women to understand. We as Americans tend not to want to do anything that isn't fun and exciting. And it's more fun, I think, to invest money because you can potentially see your money grow. It's not fun to figure out where you're spending your money and finding out that maybe you're spending in inappropriate areas.
Now, Angie, I think a lot of women maybe don't get their finances in order because they find it intimidating or they don't feel good at that. And how do you suggest they begin to take those first steps to become actually financially confident?
Well, education is a key. I provide training seminars or conferences, and I also do conferences for the treasurer of the state of Ohio. We have a wonderful program in Ohio that's free to women, business owners, housewives, young adults, senior citizens. They can come for an all-day seminar and get educated. And I usually recommend that you go as many places as you can for education, because you're right, it is intimidating and it's a lot of stuff to learn. So if you're constantly listening to what people have to say, and it's maybe a hard to understand concept, how I would explain it to you, you may not get it, but somebody else explaining it, something clicks and you think, oh, all right, now I understand it. So the more you hear the buzzwords, the more you hear the explanations as to what you need to do for yourself, it's going to become second nature. And I think education is the key. And you can either get education by studying yourself, having someone sit down and help you learn it, or taking advantage of some opportunities that might be available to you in the community. And it doesn't have to cost you anything.
And I'm sure if people look, there's lots of education opportunities in their community.
Community colleges, adult education, non-accredited adult education. A lot of your community centers will have financial individuals come in. Now, understand that if you're going to get educated and you're going to have someone, maybe you're going to go to a seminar and it's free, understand that the people providing you with the information, there's going to be two types of education. There's going to be an education like I do with the treasurer, where there's non-solicitation of business by the trainers. This is something that the treasurer of the state of Ohio puts on for the education of the women in Ohio. But there are companies like Dean Witter or Smith Barney or Morgan Stanley who will go out into the community and do free seminars, but they might want to have an interview with you and sit down and potentially have you as a client.
And their seminars may not be totally unbiased. They may be biased towards their products and services.
Exactly. And understand, too, that, sure, I mean, everybody has to make a living.
Right.
So if that's how they solicit business, or potentially, I always used to say when I was managing portfolios that it was much easier to tell 50 people what to do than it was to tell one, because out of that 50 people, I might get one or two that might want to be clients of mine. So the mindset in the financial industry, and believe me, Katerina, women are the target market, because they are finally realizing what I've known for years is that even if women don't work outside the home, they still manage the money and they still make the money decisions. And so I have found that now women are a target of financial institutions for their business. You have to be careful, but that doesn't mean if you're going to a program that somebody in the financial industry is putting on that it wouldn't be a good one, but just expect to be solicited. And if you're not interested, just say, you know what, I'm really not interested.
Now, what do you think of things like investment groups? And I like to play the cash flow game, which is kind of a fun way to learn about money. What do you think of those two ideas? And what do you think about other maybe non-traditional ways women can get educated?
I think they're great ideas. I love the idea of investment clubs. I think it's real easy for women to get together with their peers and people that they're not intimidated by and learn together. I belong to an investment club, and I have many friends that belong to investment clubs. And every month, somebody is in charge of investigating a stock or looking at a prospectus or figuring out if a mutual fund is something they want to invest in. And they are then responsible to come back to the group and give the information and be expected to ask questions. And so it entices you to know what you're talking about. And I think that games are great. In fact, I think that we should be teaching our children cash games, so we don't have a continuation of our children not understanding about money problems until they have something happen and then they're learning under distress, or they come out of college with $3,500 to $5,000 worth of debt because nobody bothered to explain to them that if you borrow the money, you have to pay it back. You know as well as I do, being a trainer and a speaker, that people learn differently.
Right.
So if you are providing yourself with an opportunity to either hear someone educate you or educate yourself or play a game where there's visuals and you're using all of your senses, you're more apt to retain the information. And I think another very important thing for your listeners to know is that most of the financial information that you hear from people is stuff they already know. They just don't know they know it. Because it's on the radio, it's in, on the television, it's in the newspaper, all the time, what we need to do. You can't turn on a television without somebody saying we have to save for retirement, and here's how you do it. But until they're ready to take the information and actually do something with it, it's just laying dormant. They have to activate it. And you activate it by the desire to move yourself to action. The time value of money is very important. That's one of the money mistakes I find. People don't understand that it's persistent, consistent investing, and it's not timing the market, it's time in the market. So if you know your goals and objectives, and you know your risk tolerance, which is one of the money mistakes, is we don't understand our risk tolerance, and you have very good product, you don't want to be making emotional decisions based on what's happening in the market today. Because what we tend to do is sell it low because it's going down and we're afraid we're going to lose our money. And then we buy it high because somebody told you about a good stock tip. And being the normal average person, we get those tips when the market is high and we tend to buy high. And we do emotional investing. And we don't understand that if we keep interrupting our investments, they won't have time to compound and grow. Failure to recognize the impact of inflation.
Can you say more about that?
Sure. When I was 19, I bought my first car. It was a Volkswagen Beetle. I paid $1,800 for it. My ex-husband and I bought our first home, and we paid $23,000 for it. Now, I know you're thinking, wow, she must be old.
No.
But I just bought a brand new Volkswagen Beetle. I paid $23,000 for it. So I paid as much for my latest car as I did my first home. That's inflation. It's when time erodes away your purchasing power. So if you have an inflation factor of 3.5%, the dollar that you spend today, if you're going to retire in 20 years, will need to be $2. So if you make $50,000 a year today, and that's the quality of life you want to retire in 20 years, that $50,000 is going to need to be $100,000. And then if you live another 20 years, that $100,000 is going to need to be $200,000. So what you spend your money on today is not going to, that dollar is not going to purchase the same. That's inflation. Inflation erodes away your purchasing power.
Angie, from when I was much younger and I would listen to financial planners talk about those kinds of numbers, I just thought that it was maybe a sales technique because it just seemed so ridiculous that I would need to have twice as much money. I think sometimes it might feel that way for people. So what you're saying is that by, is it saving or investing that we make up that difference?
Yes, you have to have two strategies. And they're part of the 10 most common mistakes. We don't understand taxes, so we would possibly not take advantage of the tax-deferred, tax-deductible opportunities that we have. Now, women business owners that are self-employed might not have the same options as if you would work for a company because the larger companies provide you with the 401k plans and the 403b plans. When you're self-employed, you have to look at the option that you want to take for your retirement, understanding that if you have employees, you have to offer the same product to your employees. That is prohibitive for small business owners because sometimes they don't make enough money to be able to offer the same thing, you know, the matching of the funds. There are opportunities like Roth IRAs, IRAs, simplified employee pension plans, simple IRAs, KEO plans, all types of opportunities to put your money away tax deductible, which lowers your taxable income so you don't pay as much tax, and then grows tax deferred. And that sounds like a lot of gobbledygook, but basically what I'm saying is those types of opportunities, think of it as having a barn, and that barn is protecting your wheat from the environment. So that IRA is your barn, or that simplified employee pension plan is your barn. And you're putting all that wheat or money in that, and it's being protected from taxes. So the product is not the barn. The product is what you put into the barn. The barn is the tool to defer taxes. you're saving money on taxes by having a lower income, and then you're putting your money away and deferring those taxes to when you retire. So if you provide yourself that opportunity, it's going to help your money grow, so when you take the money out, you'll have more purchasing power because you'll have more money. It's compounding at a higher rate. You say people don't understand it. They understand it more when they see their parents and grandparents struggling to have the same type of lifestyle that they had when they were younger. Especially in this economy and in any economy, but in certain economies when interest rates are so low, when the Federal Reserve lowers interest rates, that's great for the borrower. That's horrible for the saver, because a lot of elderly people, because their time frame is so short, they have to put their money in products that don't fluctuate in the market, and CDs and fixed income return products don't fluctuate in the market. But if you go out and buy a CD now, you're getting maybe 2%, whereas 5 years ago you were getting 7%. And another mistake they make is they think because they're retired they shouldn't take risk. But we are living longer, and a 70-year-old person has a life expectancy of 16 years. And if you're looking at 16 years in the investment area, that's long term. You have to take a little bit of risk even in retirement to be able to have that money last as long as you do. My strategies for retirement planning is you have to plan as if you're going to die tomorrow or live forever.
Both at the same time.
Both at the same time. You have to have enough protection to take care of the people you're leaving behind just in case you don't make it. Even single people, if they have financial liabilities, they might be leaving those liabilities to somebody that they love. And then what if you live a long time? I have a friend, Dr. Michael Brick. He wrote a book called Defy Aging. And in that book, he said that 150,000 baby boomers will live to be 150 years old. Well, if you're going to live to be 150 years old, you certainly don't want your money to run out when you're 84, because that's when the actuary told you you were going to die. So when you're doing all the planning for retirement and your business, you have to make a lot of assumptions. You're making an assumption you're going to be able to live a certain length of time. You make an assumption you're going to need a certain amount of money when you retire. You're going to make an assumption you're going to have a job, that you're going to be able to put money away. So a big mistake that a lot of people make is they don't reevaluate their financial plan. When you do a financial plan, it doesn't mean you have to have money to do a plan. You need the plan so when your business starts growing and you have money, that money doesn't fall through the cracks, because that's what happens. We don't know where our money is going, so when we make more money and we can start strategizing for saving and investing in retirement, that money falls through the cracks because we didn't have a plan to begin with. So you even have to have a plan if you don't have any money.
That's important, because a lot of people say, oh, I don't have enough money to meet with a financial planner and get a plan. Angie, are you of the opinion that wherever you are after college and when you start your career, that you should meet with a financial planner and get those things figured out? Or do you think it's good for people to invest on their own? What's your recommendation on that?
Well, certainly you can, if you're just starting out, you can open a mutual fund. But I am a firm believer that sitting down with a professional, look, we all have our careers, and especially when you're young and you're trying to establish yourself, you don't have time to be an expert at everything. And there are people out there that will sit down with you. Now, understand that you might be a small fish in a big pond because you don't have any money. But I found when I was managing portfolios that the people that didn't have a lot of money either knew people who did or eventually had money. And so I never discounted anybody, because I thought, you know, they have grandparents, they had friends. So I would have a lot of colleagues that would say, oh, I don't want to work with them. They don't have very much money. But I always worked with everyone, because I always felt that the more clients I had, the more chance of referrals I would get. Plus, if you have one big client and you lose them, you're in trouble. But if you have a whole lot of clients and you lose one, you're pretty secure in knowing that your business isn't going to fail.
Let's take what you just said about not having all your eggs in one basket, so to speak, in terms of your business, having multiple clients, a variety of clients. Do you advise the same thing for investing? Should we have some in real estate, some in investing, some in savings, Is that your recommendation as well?
Sure. I don't know if your parents said this to you, but my mother used to say, don't put all of your eggs in one basket, which meant don't put all of your hopes into one area. The same philosophy works when you're investing your money, because what happens is there are certain sectors that go in cycles. And most of the time when something is doing very well in the marketplace, something is not. And that's good because what drives the market is the availability in people's wants and needs of a certain particular type of investment. If everybody wants an investment, that drives the price up because everybody wants to buy that. So as you know, the rarer something is, the more expensive it is. And if people don't want something, it drives the market down. We don't know. We can't guess what's going to happen in the marketplace. If we all could guess that, we'd all be rich and we wouldn't have be having this conversation. We would be lying on the beach in Hawaii. So diversifying your portfolio or understanding how diversification works is very vital to a successful financial plan.
So then you would advise, Angie, that you want to have some in savings, some in the market, some in real estate. And where do you start?
If you're starting small, you can diversify very simply through a mutual fund. And a mutual fund is a product where a lot of small investors pool their money together and they have money managers that are making those hard decisions. They're timing the market and figuring out what's going on, or at least we hope they are if our money's in their account. So if you're a small investor, you can pick one mutual fund. Let's say you want to pick a mutual fund that has a lot of different things, bonds, stocks, real estate. You'll want to pick a balanced fund, because a balanced fund is just that. It's balanced between several different sectors. If you want to be, if you're young and want to be aggressive, obviously you want to take a little bit more risk. You want to go into a smaller, faster growing company that may not have any dividend paid into you, but there's potential for growth. But you don't want to put all of your money in long term, because what if you need it tomorrow? So you're right. You do need to have some in a savings account, some in some maybe CDs, rolling CDs. I suggest if people are just getting started and they're not sure what they want to do, they might go with a 3, 6, and 9 month and a year CD. And as those CDs come due, reinvest farther out and have money available to them if they need it, but then start dipping their toe in the water so they're not just jumping in and sinking or swimming. Because they do, if you're a small investor, you don't want to take too much risk, because obviously if we have a failure cycle, we tend not to do things we're not good at. So we just maybe say, just, this is too hard, I'm not going to do it at all. So starting small, and usually with mutual funds if you don't have a lot of money.
So Angie, we've talked about the top five most common money mistakes. Let's talk about inadequate protection against unforeseen losses.
Well, what that means is your insurance is your foundation. And I can tell you, being licensed insurance, that there's no faster way to clear a room than to say, I sell insurance. Because nobody likes insurance until they need it. And then everybody loves it. But insurance is the foundation. And what I recommend is that you have to have good health insurance, good life insurance. Obviously, disability insurance is very important, especially if you're self-employed, because your most valuable asset, if you're self-employed, is your ability to work. And if you can't work, I don't know about you, Katarina, but I have nobody that's willing to pay my bills, not even my husband, and he loves me. You start by protecting your losses, good life insurance, health insurance, disability insurance, errors and omissions insurance, your industry insurance, be bonded. Protect yourself, especially if you're a sole proprietor, because your assets are accessible if you get sued. And then build from that pyramid, go up to your savings, your passbook account, money that you can get to. And then once that is secure, you have an emergency fund, then you go to your general savings, college savings, retirement, etc. Protection against unforeseen losses is insurance, and that's very important, especially if you don't have it when you need it.
And one of the things I learned early is that, you know, it's not only insurance in case something goes wrong, but it's insurance so that you sleep better at night.
Exactly.
Because being self-employed without disability insurance, you're going to have a lot more stress than if you know you have disability insurance, you have good health insurance, and then you're not so worried if something happens.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Your most valuable asset is your ability to protect yourself against unforeseen losses.
Angie, what are a couple of other mistakes that we want our listeners to be aware of?
Not controlling, especially if you're a business owner, not controlling your family spending, not getting your family involved in financial decisions, even children, especially if you go from working for someone to becoming self-employed. It took me 3 years to start making a decent living when I started my asset management business, and I had two teenagers, so I sat them down and got them involved and explained that the cash wasn't going to be as free-flowing as it had before. I lost about 80% of my income when I got divorced, so my kids had a little bit of a shock when it came to buying clothes. They weren't buying their Nike shoes. So I started instilling some really positive financial education for my kids at that time, helping them be involved in the decision-making of where the money is spent. If your listeners don't remember anything else, what they should understand is on the day that they retire, it will no longer matter how much they've made. It will only matter how much they've saved. Because from the day you retire until the day you die, you'll be living off the money that you were willing to sacrifice today for quality of life in retirement. So if they don't pay themselves first as business owners, they don't have anyone else providing those opportunities for them. So if they don't do it themselves, they're going to be working a very long time. And what if they're one of those 150,000 people that live to be 150 years old?
Now, Angie, I think maybe part of the reason why entrepreneurs maybe are not as proactive with savings is because they love their job. They think, well, why would I want to ever retire? But it's not so much about not wanting to work. I think, great, if you're passionate and you want to do what you do forever, it's more about the freedom to be able to stop or work a lot less if you have that ability.
Well, I think the thing that you said is very important. I think baby boomers today or people today are redefining retirement, because what we're doing is we're not working for someone else and starting our own businesses and doing what we love. And it doesn't mean that we wouldn't work forever if we could, but what if you can't? Because stuff happens. But it's real important as a business owner to understand that it's their responsibility to be financially secure, and that falls on your shoulder when you're a business owner. And no matter what kind of euphoria you're in because you're excited about being a business owner, and quite frankly, entrepreneurs are more right brain than left brain. So all this financial stuff, it just gets in the way of them having fun. That's why you hire a support system. You have a good attorney, business attorney, so you make really good decisions for yourself. Mm-hmm. The last one is not surrounding yourself with professionals, not seeking professional advice. Good attorney, good CPA. You can sometimes get an attorney who's a CPA and get two bangs for your buck and have a good financial advisor, because you're concentrating on getting your business going. You don't want to worry about the latest tax law. So surrounding yourself with a support staff, and they don't have to be full-time. You can pay an attorney for their time. You can pay a financial advisor for the time. You can get a fee-only financial advisor that will sit down and discuss your finances, don't charge you anything for product because they don't sell product, and give you good financial advice based on where you are right now. And then when you start getting money, you can go back to them and show them what's happening, and they can show you what you might do from then forward. So it's not an exorbitant cost to seek good advice. And believe me, if you don't have good advice, you pay for it in the long run because you make some really bad mistakes.
Angie, you've given us so many great ideas, and we focused in our discussion today on how to create wealth. I know that you also talk about how to create better health and the weight factors on how to get your weight down. If people want to get in touch with you and find out more about your books and your programs, what should they do?
They can visit my website at www.brassringpro.com or call me at 614-337-2204.
Angie, thank you so much for being with us on Powerful Ideas for
Women. Thank you, Kathy.
Once again, we have with us our women's health expert, Leslie Oldershaw, sharing with us information on another powerful and important topic for women. Today we're going to talk about how to have great emotional health. Leslie, we know it's important, but why is it something to put your attention on to have good emotional health?
Well, if you feel good, you're going to have more vitality and greater energy. You will enjoy more satisfying relationships, you will have a better perspective on life, and most importantly, you will have more resilience in your system to take whatever life throws you in stride and to keep a positive attitude and keep moving forward towards the things that you want in life.
Okay, what do we do to have great emotional health?
I think the first and most important thing to do is recognize that all your feelings are valid. And whatever you're feeling, it's okay to feel that. You want to honor your emotions, and then you want to express them in a positive way. Let people know how something makes you feel. Get support from a therapist or friend if those feelings are challenging for you. If you need to cry, write about them in a journal. Whatever you need to do, get them out. What you don't want to do is to keep them bottled up inside, because that's going to make you sick. It's going to decrease your sense of vitality, of energy, and it's going to lower your resilience.
Okay, express your emotions, get them out without blaming, shaming, or making anybody wrong. What else?
The next thing you want to think about is your lifestyle. You want to stay well rested. The more rest we have, the more energy we have, the more resilience we have, and things aren't going to throw us as much. You also want to be getting regular exercise. Exercise, first of all, does wonderful things to increase your endorphins. Those are the natural opiates that make you happier. And it's also a great way to relieve the stress and tension that can build up in your system, especially if you are meeting emotional challenges. You also want to eat a healthy diet. That means staying well hydrated, drinking plenty of water. You also can eat lots of parsley, which is one of the highest serotonin-producing foods you can consume, 4 times more so than anything else, including chocolate. You also want to avoid or limit certain types of foods that can prove challenging to your emotional well-being. Things like sugar and alcohol are known to contribute to depression. Caffeine can lead to feelings of stress or anxiety. It can also cause insomnia. NutraSweet, or aspartame, has actually been proven in research studies to lower your cognitive function. In a word, it actually makes you stupid. So why drink it? If you want to add some kind of sweetener to a beverage, it's really better just to go with plain old-fashioned sugar than to use NutraSweet. And lastly, in terms of diet, you want to think about eating regularly so that you're not experiencing low blood sugars and some of the panic or anxiety that can go along with having low blood sugars.
Okay, Leslie, we're going to pay attention to our lifestyle. We're going to express our emotions. What else do we need to do to have great emotional health?
I think another important thing is to recognize that there are physiological factors that can create emotional challenges. And these are things that you would want to have checked out with the help of a healthcare practitioner. For women, we'll typically see hormonal imbalances leading to some challenges with their emotional health. That might be something that is out of balance with their thyroid or their adrenal glands. Or for women over 35, they may be starting to experience perimenopause, which means they're having some fluctuations in their reproductive hormones, which are creating a sense of emotional imbalance. Also, what I see a lot in my practice is women who have allergies, often to foods that they may be eating, or perfumes, or other things that they're exposed to, that create a sense of cognitive imbalance and confusion that can be low level yet very persistent, which can make them just really feel out of sorts. Often when a patient comes into me and they say, "I just don't feel like myself," often it's allergies that I find to be at the bottom of that. So my suggestion for women is make your emotional health a priority in your life. Based on what I've discussed today, if you want to take action to improve your health, first of all, recognize and honor all of your emotions, express them. Second of all, make sure that you're living a healthy lifestyle that really supports your emotional well-being. And thirdly, if you feel like there's a little bit more going on there, go see a healthcare practitioner who can help you make that assessment and find the appropriate solutions.